By the time Ronnie finally got his pass to hunt with the Reds, 2 days before George, a minor triumph, which by then he didn't enjoy, he expected no pleasure. The morning dawned murky and cold with vague clots of mist hiding the low places. Ronnie felt stiff before he even got to the stables. Buttons, spruce and cheerful, grinned at him as he stumped into the yard where the hunt gathered. He wore the red coat and insignia of the MFH of the Reds, and looked as if he'd been born in it.
Ha! Good for you! I knew you'd beat George out of the lesson pit. It's a good day for scent, anyway.
Oh, George will be along soon enough. Where's Bubbles?
Taking a vacation. She is riding with the Blues today. We decided George could survive without a family member for one lesson.
This reminder of his situation did not help. Ronnie looked around again. A groom waved to him, and he went over to get on the dark, heavy animal that was his for the day.
Supper is good, solid, reliable, and not too fast. Bring him home safe.
Ronnie noticed nothing was said about his safety. They rode out into the cold murk. Thumper seemed to think his place was in the back of the field. Ronnie kicked vigorously and got him up to the middle. They all milled around in a wet meadow while the hounds cast about for a scent. No one spoke to Ronnie, and he knew they were all eyeing him. His neck felt hot. When the hounds began to speak, he urged Thumper in that direction, but the others were faster. He trotted along near the back of the group, getting well spattered with mud the other horses kicked up. Thumper slowed, and Ronnie couldn't blame him. After a while, the horses ahead of him sped off at a canter. Ronnie followed. Now the mud flew higher. He could see it spattering the ground ahead of him. A hedge appeared from the murk, and Thumper lifted to it. On the far side, a ditch gaped. Thumper stretched, and Ronnie clung, slipping a bit at the rough landing. But he regained his seat and urged Thumper on through a flat field after the others. He wished someone had seen. It was a larger jump than he'd ever taken in a lesson. After some minutes of this, he was breathless and sore. It was much harder than the lessons, even the ones on the outside course. He couldn't tell what kind of obstacle was coming. There never seemed time to plan an approach to get himself ready for the jump. Thumper had a rough, lumbering stride, and while he jumped safely, never hitting anything, he took off with a lurch and landed hard each time. Ronnie was doing better than some. He had seen riders sprawled on the wet ground, loose horses, people remounting, but he couldn't get Thumper to catch up with the field. Thumper knew that signal and churned ahead faster. Now they passed stragglers, riders whose strained faces showed that they found this as tiring as Ronnie did.
Why do they bother? Are there that many bossy aunts in the universe?
He saw a rail fence coming up and braced himself. They were over safely, but another loomed up. Ronnie grabbed mane and survived that one, too. Thumper plunged on into the rear of the slowing field. The dogs had caught the fox, though Ronnie couldn't see it. He pulled on the reins and Thumper slowed to a walk, then stood, sides heaving. No one seemed to notice them now. The red-coated hunt staff in the center were doing something. The crowd spread out as the riders walked their horses slowly around. Thumper heaved a great sigh and shook his head a little. Ronnie noticed others getting flasks out of their saddlebags. He started to reach for his and remembered that he'd forgotten to bring it. It seemed suddenly darker, and the first cold drops of the day's rain splashed his hot neck. By nightfall, Ronnie had ridden too many hours, fallen off twice. Both times, some helpful stranger caught Thumper and brought him back, and was wet to the skin with both sweat and rain. His throat felt raw, his nose was running, and his knees and ankles felt as if he'd played the finals of some dismal professional sport involving large, angry men pounding each other to mush. He managed to stay on Thumper until he guided him through the gates of the yard, and then slithered off, staggering as he landed.
Do you need assistance?
The groom was already pampering Thumper.
I had a fall, but nothing's broken.
She turned, leading the horse away.
It's a good day, then, if nothing broke.
He stumped up to the house, hoping to make it to a hot bath without meeting anyone. But of course, there was George, dapper and witty, with Raffaella on his arm.
What did you fall into, the pig pen?
Ronnie was glad to note that Raffaella did not smirk. She was dry and clean and lovely, but she did not smirk.
Just a muddy ditch.
and I haven't fallen off in a week, even though it really rained hard during my second lesson today.
It's different out there.
Ronnie shot a glance at Raffaella. She wasn't even smiling. She looked as if she knew that his shoulder and hip hurt and was sorry.
I'll bet Bubbles and Rafa didn't fall, did you?
Rafa turned an enchanting shade of pink. Ronnie had never thought how lovely a blush could look against dark hair.
Almost. My horse stumbled on landing over a big drop, and I was right up on her neck.
But you didn't fall. Now, if that had been Ronnie, he'd have gone splat, right?
Excuse me. I'd like to take a bath before dinner.
Well, I should hope so. You certainly need one.
Ronnie fumed his way to his room.
I simply cannot spend the entire winter at this ridiculous sport. I have to get away somehow and do something where I don't feel a complete fool. I'm not sure this is a good idea.
Do you really want to spend another day bouncing around on that horse?
Of course Ronnie didn't. That was the point. It had been bad enough before George got into the hunt, and worse afterwards.
You look ridiculous on a horse.
I do not!
Ronnie glared at his friend. George had not fallen off in his first time in the field, and it had gone to his head. He seemed to think a successful maiden appearance made up for later runaways, buckings off, and an inability to keep up with the field on a slow day.
I ride better than you.
And not nearly so well as your aged aunt or that demon captain of hers. Honestly, I had no idea the rakes went in for horse riding. I thought they spent all their time polishing weapons and doing drills.
They do love drills, don't they? At least down here, Captain Serrano can't interrupt our sleep.
No. That's the purview of your aunt, waking us up before daylight to gobble a disgusting breakfast and clamber onto great clumsy, smelly animals.
Ronnie felt a perverse desire to insist that it wasn't that bad. Bubbles patted him on the shoulder as she clambered past him.
And you did look so funny, Lamb, when you were stuck in that hedge, all red-faced and blubbering.
Just Bubbles.
Fine.
Ronnie slid the canopy forward. The others were still stowing their supplies in the lockers. He was beginning to wish he hadn't agreed to this, but how could he back out now? He called up the pre-flight checklist on the display and started down it. The computer would have done everything, of course, but he was not as careless as his aunt thought.
Come on, Ron. Get this thing off the ground.
Pre-flight. You should know that, George.
Ronnie worked his way down the rest of the pre-flight list in silence. As usual, everything seemed to be in order. He inserted the cube and checked the readout. It had accepted his course programming and calculated fuel consumption based on satellite weather information.
Refuel once. Anyone care if it's Bandon or Kalu?
Bandon.
Ronnie entered that with the touchpad, cast a glance back to make sure all the loose items were stowed, and pressed the green button. The engines caught, and the computer took over the final pre-flight power checks. At least he knew what the readouts meant, though he could not, from this point on, override the computer's decisions. Not much like a royal trainer, these civilian models would fly themselves, given the chance. He laid his hands lightly on the yoke anyway, and punched for manual takeoff. He felt the yoke quiver, and the computer displayed his options. If he stayed within these margins, he could have control. And within those, he could control one axis. For a moment, it amused him. For a human to be allowed to fly the machine, he had to fly like a machine. It would be practice, and he had always enjoyed flying. He flicked his fingers over the yoke studs. Power, directional focus, attitude, and the computer agreed that he knew what he was doing. He didn't know if the others noticed, but he had manual control until he chose to relinquish it, when the craft was at 5,000 meters and on course to Bandon.
It's dark outside. There's nothing but the house lights.
We had to leave before daylight, or Ronnie's aunt would have stopped us.
Ronnie tried to see past the reflections on the canopy. Nothing but darkness. He flicked off the interior lights and looked harder. Nothing ahead but darkness. Nothing to either side but darkness. He'd never seen anything quite so black in his life.
It'll be dawn soon, and the computer doesn't need daylight.
As it came out of his mouth, he realized that they knew that. He was comforting himself. Darkness hid his blush. Behind him, someone turned on one of the tiny reading lights, a soft glow in the rear of the cabin. Ronnie left the main cabin lights off. He found that he kept looking to the right, hoping to see some glimmer of dawn. Just when he had given up hope, and convinced himself that he would have to endure flying down a black drainpipe forever, a sullen glow lit the horizon, more feeling than color. Soon he was sure of it. A dim redness blotched with black, clouds, he realized, and then a curious fuzzy quality to the outside. Still dark, still impenetrable, but somehow seeming larger than it had. As the light strengthened, he saw the sea beneath, oddly brighter than the sky. Away towards sunrise it stretched, and the clouds hung over it in dark columns, their tops flushed pink now with the coming light. Ronnie had never flown along a coast at sunrise. He had not imagined the impossible combinations of green and blue and purple, the piles of pink and gold which clouds and sea and sunrise make. He looked down on the dark land slowly coming out of the dark haze of night, the shoreline edged with ruffles of colorless surf that would soon be silver and blue. His quick memory for maps told him they were almost a third of the way to Bandon. The computer would soon change their course away from sunrise, across the narrowing belt of land and out across the ocean to that cluster of islands. He hoped it would not change before he could see the sun lift out of the sea.
There's nothing down there at all. Where are we?
Oh, this is the bottleneck. Oh, gorgeous morning, especially since I don't have to climb on a horse. Oh, don't worry, Rafa, we can't get lost. The computer on this thing has a direct line to the Navsat. If we went down, someone would be there in no time.
But somebody must live somewhere.
On up the coast a bit, there's a settlement of wildlife biologists. They're to keep the stuff we don't want out of the hunt ground.
The sun came up and glittered on the surf just as Ronnie had imagined. And a few minutes later, the computer swung them left, away from the coast, and across the forested bottleneck. Bubbles served breakfast, pastries and fruit and hot coffee she'd filched from the kitchen before they left. Ronnie stretched, enjoying the comfort of baggy trousers, loose shirt, and low, soft-sided boots after the confines of hunting attire. By the time they'd eaten, they'd crossed the other coast and were headed across a blue, wrinkled ocean toward the islands. Ronnie had nothing to do, so he turned his seat around and listened to the girls speculate on when Bunny would send someone after them.
I hope it's not Aunt Ceci.
Oh, he wouldn't send her. She's a guest. It will probably be some boring mid-level administrator.
We could just tell your father, once we get there, that is.
No. You don't know how he is. He'll lecture me, I'll get mad, we'll argue, and then I'll have to make up. Or he will, and that takes time I could be enjoying with you.
Ronnie put the landing system on automatic when he thought they were in range of Bandon. It would contact the field and bring them in without his intervention, though he hoped the computer would allow him a manual landing. When the comm beeped and the field authorization light turned red, he assumed that the field wanted a voice contact. It seemed a reasonable way to keep out unwanted guests.
Any special code words?
No, just give the flitter number. It's on the family list.
Bandon Field. Permission to land and refuel. Number 002413.
Permission denied.
Ronnie stared at the computer display. He had never heard of a civilian field refusing permission to land and refuel.
Bandon Field. Permission to land and refuel. Number 002413. We're low on fuel, Bandon Field.
Permission denied.
Override that. Put in Landsman 78342 and see what happens. That's Father's personal code.
Ronnie poked at the screen and hit the orange override button.
Permission denied.
Can we make Kaloo from here?
Just barely, but I don't see why we should. This is Bunny's flitter, and Bubbles just gave us the internal authorization number. If it won't accept it, something's wrong.
We don't want to land if something's wrong. What could be wrong? What's on this island anyway, Bubbles?
Well, the landing field, maintenance station, and the family's lodge, and no resident staff, though.
There's a lodge here, too? Then why did you tell me to program for White Wings?
We wanted to be out of everyone's reach. This is too close. This is the first place they'd look.
Ronnie looked out the canopy. Heavily wooded islands lay scattered in odd shapes across the sea. Bandon, the computer readout told him, was a half hour ahead. He could see its distinctive shape beyond the nearest island. Kaloo, the northernmost of the chain, lay far to their right.
We ought to find out what's wrong. We'll go on to Bandon and take a look.
They could still make Kalu if they had to, and if they found out something important, Bunny might forgive their disappearance. With the vague notion that he was being careful, Ronnie let the flitter drop lower and skimmed just above the forest, following the contours with care, then made a low approach across the sea between that island and Bandon, edging past a smaller island not quite in his path between them. He did not look outside, concentrating instead on his instruments. If he dipped too low, the flitter's automatic safety overrides would lower the plenum and convert it to an airboat. That could be most embarrassing. George saw the danger first.
Look out!
Ronnie looked back at him, wondering what kind of game they were playing back there. Then he saw it, just before it struck, an odd shape trailing a line of orange smoke. The flitter jerked itself out of his control, bouncing up and sideways, and a good half of the readouts went red. Ronnie grabbed the controls back, felt the ominous mushiness, and went into the emergency landing sequence he had never expected to use once passed his piloting exam. The airspeed readout, like all in that bank, was dead. The white beach and green trees ahead moved nearer too slowly. Behind him, no one spoke. George clambered forward, disturbing the flitter's precarious balance, and dropped into the other forward seat.
I think it was a signal rocket. All that red smoke.
She's nose heavy, and the hydraulics are shot. Use that big foot on the floor, not your mouth.
Whatever George did made no difference. The flitter sank toward the waves.
Brace up, you girls.
Brace up yourself, Jay. We're trying to get the raft out.
Ronnie tried once more to pull the nose up, but the flitter shivered all over like a nervous dog. Flitters don't stall, he remembered being told, but they crash all the same. It occurred to him that even if they made it to land, he might simply crash head-on into the lush forest. Could he maneuver at all? Altitude, then maneuver, he remembered. But he had no altitude. He tried. The flitter slewed sideways, but answered sluggishly. He could parallel the coastline and those trees.
George! There! Those people!
Ronnie did not look. He had to keep the flitter in the air as long as he could. George leaned to see.
Naked, but armed. I think that's the launcher he hit us with.
Ronnie put all his strength into willing the flitter not to crash into a lump of trees nearer shore than the rest.
Hunting Party will be concluded in part 2. The Serrano Legacy Hunting Party is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2002 Elizabeth Moon. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2008 The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, David Coyne, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Michael John Casey, Christopher Graybill, Sonny Lasky, M.B. Van Dorn, Tess Rowan, Thomas Penny, Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, James Konacek, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Chris Rowan. Additional original music by Chris Rowan. If you enjoyed Serrano Legacy, be sure to look for the Deathstalker series, available at Roadstops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.